Hello, everyone, and welcome to a fundraising conversation about millennials by millennials. I'm Brian Saber, president of Asking Matter. I am not a millennial. I am at the tail end of the baby boomer generation and feeling rather old these days at 55. But I am fascinated by this topic. It's an important topic, one we haven't covered much at Asking Matters, and one that hasn't been covered that much from this angle. We've all talked about millennials as donors. We hear a lot about them, what they want, how they give, and so forth. Why they give, I should say, and very little about who they are as fundraisers. And so I am really delighted to have Nick here today to talk about this. And I'm going to introduce him in a minute, but I'm first going to do some brief housekeeping. So right now on your left, you should see a slide, and on your right, a control panel. If not, click on that orange and white arrow to expand it. There are two things you're going to want to be aware of here. First, if you're having any audio issues, it's usually on your end. Sometimes it's GoToWebinar and things go crazy, but usually you can fix that by toggling from computer audio. Most of us listen over the computer to phone call, and you'll get a telephone number to call in on. If that doesn't work, type something in the questions box, which is the other piece here, and Kyle, who's on, will try and resolve that with you. And to make sure you know where that questions box is, I'd love you to type in where you are listening in from today. I am speaking to you today from South Orange, New Jersey, where I live and work. And let's see where all of you are from. We have hundreds and hundreds of you on today, and I see Montreal, Ottawa, Chicago, Arlington, another person from Ottawa, Philadelphia, California, Kansas City. Wonderful to have people from all over the country and from Canada and beyond. One last bit of housekeeping. You will get a link to a recording and a PDF of the slides tomorrow. So you don't have to necessarily write down what you see. Nick's got some great slides here, and you will get a copy of all of that. I hope you'll ask questions as we go along. Nick's got a lot to cover, but we'll stop where we can to take questions, certainly take some at the end. And now, before I introduce Nick, we want to launch a poll and see what you think. So it's going to show up on your screen. There you go. Who is a millennial? Do you know who the millennials are? Anyone born in the millennium? Anyone born after 1990? Are they 16 to 30, 20 to 34, 22 to 37? What do you think? You're going to stop and think. I hope no one's going to Google this. No cheating. There, Nick will give you the correct answer later. But who do you think is in this millennial age range? And I'll give you two more seconds. We've got about two-thirds of you. Let's see how it came out. I'm going to close it and share the results on the screen. There you are. So we've got a range. We've got, no one thought it was people born in this millennium. That's good. 14% 28 and younger, 13% 16 to 30, 38, 20 to 34, 36, 22 to 37. Okay, I'm going to make you wait to find out from Nick what that range is. And now I'm going to introduce him. So let me just go back to my slides, advance, and share. I am really delighted to have Nick here. Nick and one of his buddies, Dustin, approached me last fall and said they wanted me to be their a presenter at AFP International. Nick, as you see here, is chair of AFP International's Next Generation Committee. Dustin is on that committee and chairs a subcommittee, and they get to choose one person to present, which was amazing. I actually didn't have to apply to AFP International. It was like getting a buy. I got chosen, and I was so delighted because a couple of hundred young professionals go to AFP International. And Nick and I got to know each other. He wined and dined me when we were down in New Orleans in April. Some of you might have even attended. And I apologize. Those results were still up there, so you're not seeing Nick's handsome face. There you go. And it was a great success. Lots of people showed up to find out about the asking styles. Nick and I continued to talk, and I thought, wow, this is an amazing topic. By day, even though Nick's doing a ton of volunteer work, he is the director of development at the College of Engineering for the University of Toledo, and he is a millennial. He is going to share a ton with you about them. Nick, are you with us?
I am.
Great. Thanks, okay. So I am really delighted to have you here, and I'm going to turn the screen over to you. And here you go.
All right. Great. So hopefully you're seeing the initial title screen here. If you are, that's great. If not, Brian will let me know and we'll make adjustments if need be.
You are. We are.
Perfect. Well, Brian, thank you very much for having me today. What Brian didn't tell you is that for those of you who have attended AFP international conferences, you know, it's just like other conferences. You have the chairs set up and people come and they head towards the back and maybe filter into the front a little bit. Brian's session this year had people sitting on the ground Indian style because it was so packed. I looked out the doorway and I thought I saw about 30 more people who were waiting to get in but couldn't find a seat. So, you know, Brian's message really resonated with a lot of people, and we were really happy to have him join the conference. So thank you again, Brian, for doing that.
Oh, my pleasure. It was great.
And thanks for everyone for joining us today. You know, this has really been a topic that has grown throughout the U.S., not just in fundraising, but in industries all over. And so a few years ago, we really started to dive into this idea of what are millennials, how do they impact the industry? And then more recently, when I took over as the chair of the Next Gen Committee for AFP, really trying to do more around engaging young professionals, learning about them, and how we can move this forward. So, you know, there's going to be a lot of content here. Please feel free to type in questions. Ask me anything about the data as we move forward. I'm more than happy to give all that information. And I want this to be as engaging as possible because I've been on plenty of webinars on your guys' end, and I always feel like I get more out of it when I'm asking questions along the way. So before I get started, I just want to acknowledge a couple people that have been really helpful throughout this process. So this presentation that I'm about to give to you was not just created by me. About 18, 24 months ago, I teamed up with what I call the Millennial Brain Trust to conduct a survey of young professionals in the industry with the support of AFP. So I want to acknowledge both Dustin Williams, who Brian talked about a little bit, and then Emily Reed for their efforts in researching this data, building the survey, building parts of this presentation that we've done before. And then also, both are rising stars within the industry. They're members of my committee. Just a little quick background, Emily Reed is the Director of Development for the Jeanine Rainbow College of Education for the University of Oklahoma, and Dustin Williams is the Director of Leadership Gifts at the Polycystic Kidney Disease Foundation. So if you guys are on the call, great. I want to say thank you very much, but also if the data is not right, don't bring it up. So just kidding. But what are you going to get in this session? The things that we're going to cover are, what is a millennial? This is something that you saw in the initial poll. There's questions all the time about what a millennial actually is. What are millennial fundraisers thinking and feeling? I think this is extremely important when you think about the trends of millennials within the industry, their tenure at organizations, the multi-generational office. So many of you are also in multi-generational offices. This is one of the few times in our history as Americans where you have many generations working together in roles. So it's a dynamic that is new to the American workforce. And then map your career. So my goal is to present this information from two perspectives. First, if you're a millennial listening to this webinar, I hope this information resonates with you and you use it as a guide to help your own career. And if you're not a millennial, but you're on the call because you want to learn how to better manage your millennial staff, or you work with a lot of millennials in your office, I hope this allows you a little bit of a perspective into their world. This information should be helpful in the management of a millennial team or a team made up of millennials and other generations. So we'll talk about that more as we go through this presentation.
Nick, before you continue, Sarah Wiley had a good suggestion. I'm sorry we missed it. And that was to find out who on the call is a millennial and who isn't. So if you can say yes or no in the questions box, we'll just do an informal. We'll see as it scrolls through how many of you are millennials. And so far, I'd say we're tracking a good 75% millennials. Now, of course, it could be that millennials are quicker to use their computers, too, as opposed to just listening. But so far, we've got 100 some odd of you. I'd say it's about 65% millennials and the rest of you not. So that might give us a little perspective for today.
Sure, absolutely. And thanks, Sarah, for asking to do that. I think that's a great idea. So what is a millennial? This is the question I get most often in both my volunteer and professional roles. Some may say that we are Starbucks drinking hipsters that want to tweet about how great their low-fat caramel macchiato tastes on their way back to the office. And this is a general stereotype that we hear. Or they may be more worried about the next post on Facebook or Instagram than getting to their work at the office. And so these are some of the things that we see generally all the time. The other thing that we seem to see a lot is that millennials have become a phenomenon. I mean, right now, if you go into Google, now this picture is a couple years old, but you can see what happens when you search millennials are. And I actually redid this this morning before I came onto the webinar, and I still got many of the same answers. Millennials are lazy. Millennials are this. Millennials are that. And it's become such a phenomenon that it's now clogging up autofill for Google. And to be honest, it's hard for me to believe that, you know, as a millennial, I'm a lazy idiot that is screwed and is killing the napkin industry. Because for any of you on the call that know me, my kids go through about a million napkins a day. If anything, I'm helping their stock. But from perspective, if you're a millennial, I mean, these are the things that you may hear each day. Some of these may resonate with you because you see them on a regular basis. This is another perspective that we see. This picture has become a common theme. You know, Time Magazine is just one of many magazines that over the past 5 years has pointed out some of the myths about millennials. Publishing companies have been making a fortune during this time period, writing articles constantly about how to engage, manage, and deal with millennials. I do appreciate the fact that in the Time article, they included the phrase, why they will save us all. I just wish it was as the big white letters as the me generation. But that's where we really come to, not only within the industry, but within our culture as a whole, is trying to understand what millennials are and what drives them. And part of the reason why we started developing some of this research into the millennial generation in fundraising is we just got tired of people telling our story. And so we want to take that story back and start to build it in a way that allows millennials to be successful within our industry and then also successful within the U.S. So going back to our poll question earlier, you were asked, well, what is a millennial? So here's your answer. For the roughly, I believe it was 36% of you that chose 22 to 37, you're correct. So this year, a really astonishing thing happened, and many of you didn't even notice it. The Pew Research Center decided to cut off the millennial generation. As you'll see in this chart above, millennials were born from 1981 to 1996, so that 22 to 37 years old. This may shock some of you when you begin thinking about, oh, I thought that college students were millennials. I thought that kids in high school were millennials, and they're actually part of Gen Z. So to put this in perspective, I just wanted to give a few recent historical things to consider when thinking about the millennial generation. So, you know, for those of millennials on the phone, this will be a little bit of a reflection. And then those of you who aren't, a little perspective. So most millennials were between the ages of 5 and 20 when the 9/11 terrorist attacks happened in our nation. Millennials also grew up in the shadow of the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, which sharpened broader views of intense political polarization and into our current political environment. Most millennials were between 12 and 27 in the 2008 election, where they helped elect the first African-American president. Added to this fact, millennials are the most racially and ethnically diverse adult generation in our nation's history. So beyond any of the politics, most millennials came to age and entered the workforce facing the height of the economic recession. And last but not least, because I can't leave it out, technology, the iPhone launched in 2007. So millennials were between the ages of 11 and 26 when that happened. And you can see how that played an important role, not only in their adolescent lives, but also into their early careers. So those are some perspectives that I think sometimes we don't think back to on how historical events impact generations. And these are just a few of the ones that have impacted ours. So why is all this information about millennials important for the fundraising industry? There's an interesting career outlook for all millennials, but also something to consider for our more seasoned professionals. So, as you'll see on the screen, by 2026, the U.S. Bureau of Labor is projecting a 15% growth in fundraising jobs. This is significant growth compared to other industries. Baby boomers will begin retiring at a rate of 10,000 individuals each day in the U.S. So many of our current leaders within the industry are leaving at a pretty high rate. Now, for the next group that follows the baby boomers, the top end of Gen X turns 53 years old this year. So by 2030, many will begin retiring and leaving the industry. Also, I think it's important to point out that Gen X is smaller than both the baby boomers and millennial generations. That meaning that there's going to be a lot of vacancies that are still going to be available once the baby boomers are really out of the workforce. So something to consider for many of the millennials on the phone. And then Gen Z turns 21, so we're not going to spend a whole lot of time on Gen Z, but just to give you the perspective of the next generation is now, you know, for us in higher ed, their junior year of college, and will begin to enter the workforce soon. So as you can see with these stats, there's going to be a serious vacuum of talent within the industry and in a very short period of time. In 2016, there were 90,400 fundraisers in the U.S. alone. And think about this. Just recently, Giving USA reported that there was a $410 billion given in 2017. When you start to put those numbers together of the amount of money that's being raised across the country, and then also the idea that there's going to be a vacuum of talent within the industry, those two things come together really highlight the importance of bringing that millennial talent along within the within fundraising. So with that data and information for you to understand, let's start talking about what are millennials thinking and feeling. So I referenced before that Emily, Dustin, and I together put a survey together to talk with young professionals around the country about a range of things. You know, what are they hearing? What are their strengths? How are their careers? What are their challenges? And there was a range of individuals who participated as well. So from annual giving to major gifts to some executive directors. So we feel like we got a really great cross-section of millennials in the fundraising workplace. And there are some really interesting stats that we found when going through this. So one of the things that really popped out to us was that 81% of our survey respondents feel anxious, nervous, or worried before meeting a donor for the first time because of their age or perceived lack of experience. So for those of you on the phone that aren't millennials, I know that I've had this conversation with other generations and they've said, While many of us feel nervous about going into a meeting with donors for the first time, there's sometimes just that natural sense of, well, I'm meeting someone, I don't know who they are, we got to get to know each other, and then we're moving them towards a gift. But I think what's important about this section is the addition of, because of their age and perceived lack of experience. So that's an intrinsic feeling that millennials have currently within the industry.
Nick?
Yes.
Nick, can I ask you for a clarification? Was that when you were talking about, I think it was 19,000 jobs and 15% growth. Can you clarify what you were talking about there? We got a few questions on that. Was that 19,000 open jobs, or can you just repeat that?
Yeah. So by 2026, that's going to be the increase of jobs within the industry. So we're not talking about open jobs. We have a variety of open jobs currently within the industry.
Yes.
So from when the Bureau survey was done in 2016 to 10 years out, they're projecting that that's going to be the increase of number of jobs.
That being what number is that? That's what is that 19? You said something about 19,000 a day or something and 100.
Yep. So there's 15% growth, so roughly 19,000 jobs by 2026. And the 10,000 a day was the rate at which baby boomers are retiring within the U.S.
Okay, 10,000 a day retiring and 19,000 new jobs a day, you're saying?
19,000 new jobs by 2026.
Got it. Okay. I think I have it. If not, we'll clarify it in a note for tomorrow.
Sure. Yeah. So what this is doing from the Bureau, they have a whole formula and algorithm talking about how jobs grow within the U.S. And so that's their current projection of new jobs that will be there in 2026 that aren't there currently as of 2016.
Okay. Got it.
Great. So another thing that we found really interesting is that 70% of our young professionals within the industry interact with seasoned fundraisers and colleagues at their organization at least weekly. So there is that interaction, a large percentage of interaction in between generations at the workplace, especially with people who do fundraising. But the thing that we found a little troubling initially is that 85% did not seek out advice from seasoned fundraising professionals at their organization. So I'll go back for a second. So 70% of young professionals who took the survey interact with a seasoned fundraiser at their organization, but 85% of those people did not seek advice. So if you're a millennial on the phone, you may be thinking to yourself, well, wow, that's interesting. You know, you have some resources on staff. You know, it may be worth spending more time talking with seasoned professionals. And if you're a manager on the phone, this may be very telling to understand that many of your millennial staff are not asking for advice, even though they have people around them that could give them advice on how to be better fundraisers, how to progress their career. So I think it's important from both angles to understand the impact of this statistic. Another thing that was really interesting is that 23% of the respondents have taken advantage of volunteer roles, networking, or attending conferences for professional development. So we do have almost a quarter of all the young professionals out there moving towards taking on professional development activities to become better fundraisers. So I think that's really becoming a growing trend. I mean, as many of you on the phone may know, there may be other things, resource issues, where maybe you're not able to go to a conference, but more and more are taking on roles, which I think is very good. And then this one is very interesting. So we asked people, what types of communication are they most uncomfortable with? And the two biggest areas, which in some ways aren't a total surprise, is that 65% of respondents said that they were most uncomfortable with the phone. And then the next 21% said they were most uncomfortable with in-person meetings. So again, some of this may just be the generational differences of how technology has impacted the millennial generation. The other parts may be is that some of these people are earlier on in their career, so they may not have as much interface with donors as maybe a major gift officer or an executive director or director of development. But it is funny because what I generally feel is like, this is where we are as young professionals with the industry. I mean, I've gotten these feelings sometimes. There are just times where you feel like there's things I'd rather do than make a phone call. And being eaten by a dinosaur that shows no mercy sometimes doesn't sound that bad. I mean, we all get these feelings as we grow as individuals within the industry.
Nick?
Yes.
Well, first of all, and I think you know this from the talks we've had, and this is a big part of my work at Asking Matters and with the Asking Styles, which I know you're going to touch on, this idea of the phone. You know, many of us for years have had an issue with the phone. I've never liked the phone, and I feel lucky that I had email for most of my career, and I attribute a lot of my success to it. As I was saying, the younger generation, you know, is so used to typing, you know, emails and now texts and things like that, that it's not surprising that those numbers are even greater for the younger generation. I just wanted to let everyone know we're getting a lot of wonderful questions. I just want you to know that I'm watching the questions box for Nick because there are hundreds of you on here, and I might take a few of those questions in the middle. Some of them I'll leave for the end. I have a feeling we won't get to all of them because they're stacking up. But Nick, I'd like to ask you two right now. Do you have any idea, this Pew Research, was this just for, is this just on Americans? I'm assuming that millennial is something that's general to the world, or no? Or is it specifically an American framework, millennials, yeah. Gen X and such? Do you know?
So I've seen research where they're how to compare generations in different countries. Mm-hmm. The Pew information is specifically for the U.S.
It is for the U.S. Okay. Yeah. Any idea if it's, I mean, Canada is similar to us in some ways and not in others? Do you happen to know if because we have a number of people on from Canada today, whether how similar this data might be? And you may very well not know that.
No, I can't give a definite answer. I haven't seen specific Canadian numbers, but my guess would be, since many things between Canada and U.S. are aligned, you may see similar trends. The question just may be, you know, as many of you know, when you're trying to figure out the characteristics of a generation, you're looking for specific items. So because you're looking for specific items, what may be culturally relevant in the U.S. for millennials ages 22 to 37 may not be as culturally mm-hmm. relevant in Canada, in China, in Australia, in Europe. So many of the people who do this research would probably say that they're looking for specific characteristics. So a millennial in Canada may look similar, but not exact to the US, and a millennial in Japan may look completely different. And they may not even call them millennials.
Interesting, okay. And thank you for clarifying that. And two questions related to the phone that came in, which I'd like to share right now. The first is, were you talking just about asking for a gift over the phone or having conversations with donors over the phone? First, if you could answer that one, what is that data referencing?
Yeah, it's any interaction on the phone, whether you're asking for a gift or you're calling someone to set up an appointment or you're calling to do a thank you call. It was any interaction that you have on the phone.
Okay, great. And the second question from Rochelle is, how detrimental, and you might be covering this, how detrimental to our success as millennials is our fear or discomfort of the phone? And do you have any tips for getting past that? So you might be touching on that. I know you and I talked about not going into too much detail on actual fundraising.
Yeah, so just methods. Briefly. Yeah.
Yes.
I think the number one thing to do is you have to prepare. So for those of you on the phone that may have an issue, or those of you who may have an issue with getting on the phone, I'll tell you that even in my work today, I have 3 or 4 scripts that I use all the time. So it's making a call to someone I've never met before. It's leaving a voicemail at their home, leaving a voicemail at the office. So quick, succinct scripts that allow me to get through the phone call and feel comfortable about it. The other thing I would say that I think has been very successful for my own career is that it doesn't mean that you can't intertwine different types of communication. So many times if I'm, you know, traveling to Seattle, I may start some conversations via email. And in the email that does the introduction, I may also say, well, the next couple of days, I'll be giving you a call to set up a time to meet. And so it takes away a little bit of that, fearful feeling because I've already interacted with the donor in a way that allows them to know who I am, where I'm calling from, and what I'm trying to accomplish. So that's also been extremely helpful. And I feel like on the donor side, they feel like it's helpful because it's not just who's Nick Kulick giving them a call. They actually know who's calling, what organization I'm from, and what I'm trying to do. So those would be a couple that I would add.
I think those are great, Nick, and very much in line with what we teach at Asking Matters. For most of us, just calling out of the blue can be very awkward. We can catch our donors off guard. Of course, we can catch them, which sometimes it's hard to do. But I despise the phone to answer that. I think it was Rochelle's question. I've used it as little as possible and have been, I believe, and I think my boss's and clients' belief have been a very successful fundraiser, mostly using email until I meet people in person. Of course, you have to be able to reach the person, and if someone's not responsive by email, you need to use something else. But I've always said use what you're most comfortable with, because then you're going to do the best job, right? I mean, if your donor won't do anything but talk on the phone, you have no choice. But most donors are a little more flexible than that, and for many of us, we can make a better opening argument, if you will, case for meeting by email, and then, as Nick says, follow up with a call, or at least give people a heads up.
Absolutely.
So onward we go.
Great. So one of the other things, the quick stats that we're going to talk about is the career planning aspect. So we also asked there are respondents, how far out are you looking in your career right now? And what you can see on this chart is that the vast majority, roughly 81%, are not thinking of their careers beyond the next 5 years. Now, for some people, they may say, well, I'm just trying to get through my first fundraising job, my second fundraising job, and build up your resume. But truly, if you have an idea of where you want to go, looking 5 years or out is something you need to do to be successful. So we were very interested to see that the vast majority of young professionals were just looking 5 years out. Now, some of the other things that we asked is just anecdotal information. So how does age hinder your career? And so we got some really interesting responses. So as you can see on the screen, I really have to prove myself to obtain new projects and credibility. The perception that I'm cute or an assistant when I've been trained and developed as a professional is another one that comes up. And many of my older board members will view me in the same regard as their children. I know I dealt with this a lot in my career, and I'm sure many of you have as well. Now, when you look at the other side of the coin, what we also want to know is how do we millennials feel that their age contributes to their career? So I think my age contributes to fresh ideas and creativity, innovation, and the embracing of technology, and then the excitement and passion about our work. So what we know about the millennial generation, just characteristics-wise, is that technology is a given, right? We know that we're a very tech-savvy generation. But the one that I find interesting, and we had a back and forth about, was the excitement and passion about your organization. Now, I don't want to say that any other generation isn't excited or isn't passionate about what they do. But what we know from publications out there today is that millennials have a higher altruistic feel about the work they do than previous generations, which I think for our industry is a plus because we get very ingrained with our organizations and ingrained in the work that we do. So I think that's a huge advantage for millennials. So the multi-generational office. There's some generational perceptions that we all deal with, how young professionals are perceived generally. So we see this a lot. How are they seen? They're interacted with. There's a variety of books that talk about, well, how do you get them off their phones? They don't work a 9-to-5 job. They don't like being in the office. Those general perceptions that we hear on a regular basis. And then young professionals don't perceive themselves in the same way, obviously. Going back to what you just saw with the ideas of innovation, fresh perspectives, many millennials, the term is used as work-life balance. What I really like to call it is work-life integration. So in the same time that I'm doing the work that I need to do for my employer, I'm also doing other things like these presentations and doing some other stuff, maybe with my kids, but making up that time later. So it's not odd for me to be up at 10 o'clock at night working on our proposals, sending emails, contacting donors. And so how, that work-life integration is something that's very important and to keep in perspective. Also, the current situation in the workplace. So I think we'll talk about here in a little bit about how to set the tone for your office, but understanding the current situation in workplaces, because just because you come from an environment that's very accepting to different generations that are working together, I think it's important to understand that not all workplaces are like that. So being aware of what the current situation is in your workplace is extremely important. So generational concerns in the office. You know, the current millennial conversation comes up all the time. You know, the millennial this, the millennial that. You know, you saw the Google results, so we know people are thinking about it. But the other one that I think is really interesting that we've all dealt with is, you remind me of my son or daughter. So millennials can become very defensive, but it's important to remember that these comments are not always meant to be divisive. It, you know, sometimes, you know, these comments are really more a relational comment that we as millennials have to make sure that we understand. And then also, but people in the workplace should understand that, you know, this is how millennials feel, that they're always seen as everyone's son or daughter. So just some other perceptions within the office. Now, setting the tone. So if you're thinking to yourself, I'm not taken seriously, my age is a hindrance and not something that's helping me, how do I begin to set the tone to really change that? So first, the balance of flexibility and professionalism. So I just talked about that a little bit, the work-life integration. So understanding that if you are living an integrated life, that you are also getting your work items done. So it's one thing to say that I'm leaving the office to do the X, Y, and Z, but if you're not completing those tasks and it's not helping you balance that flexibility with your professionalism. I think it's always important to treat your colleagues like donors. You know, you're trying to earn your stripes and make it away in the office. So how do you treat them in a way that garners respect? And then also build relationships. I mean, that's what we do day in and day out. So how do we continue to build relationships with our colleagues? Present yourself as someone who knows what they're talking about. And you do. Tell people about your own story when it comes to why you got into fundraising. We all have our different reasons for why we did it. But I think that shows a little bit of credibility of why we think this industry is important, why that we think the organization we work for is important. And then it starts to take away some of that, those generational differences, and starts to show that we're all here on the same team, regardless of generations. I think another really big important thing is read. So you should be reading The Chronicle of Philanthropy, Advancing Philanthropy, Asking Matters, all these different things to, so that you understand the industry, but also read other things. Read stuff that relates to your organization. You know, if you are in higher education, what are you reading about in higher education to understand the industry? If you work for a medical association, what are you doing? Also, how up are you on the news? Are you reading, you know, for me, it's Google News that brings in a variety of news sites so that we can talk about what's going on just within in life. So many of you may have seen that there's a lot of Supreme Court decisions that have come down in the past month or so. Are you aware of what those are? Do your donors know what's going on? How does that impact your organization? All those things are very important. Also, being involved with the fundraising community outside of your workplace, so you can garner a lot of credibility by being a part of the industry, volunteer at local organizations, maybe do participate in some fundraising activities outside of what you do. Now, you always have to be careful of that line between you're paid to be a fundraiser at your organization and you don't want to go out and raise a bunch of money for another organization where you may have issues between donors. But if you're doing things like a bike to the bay or a 5K, how are you participating in the fundraising community outside of the workplace? And I think it's important, don't be afraid to show your credentials. I have this conversation on a regular basis. I'm a CFRE. I'm very proud of that accomplishment. Now, I'm not going to tell you that the CFRE is the world's end-all be-all on fundraising credentials, but I went through a process to understand fundraising, to raise money, to be in the industry, and to give back to the industry. And because of that, I learned way more about the industry than I would have learned just sitting at my office and working the regular day-to-day. So if you have the credentials, don't shy away with it. Show that you've done this work and that you want to be within the industry. Now, going on a little bit to mapping your career, I really want both the millennials and the other professionals in the room to think of this in different ways. So, again, millennials, this could be a tool for you on your own discovery of your career. And for senior staff, this may be some information that you can utilize for your team back at your office. So we know that right now that the average tenure for the fundraiser is about 18 months. And on top of that, I found this really interesting. Last year, LinkedIn did a study for some 500 million users looking back 20 years. Their study found that millennials will change jobs on average of 4 times in their first decade out of college. So compare that to the job changes for Gen Xers. In their first 10 years out of college, they only changed jobs about 2 times. So it's important to point out that from a manager perspective, you have to be more vigilant than ever to retain high-performing young talent within this industry. So that just a little bit of a lens for you as we go through this information. So where are you now? What are your fundraising experiences? What have you done so far in your career? What are you missing? So for many of us, there may be components that we need to do more of. And so where can we find the information, the experiences that are missing within our career? Where can you gain those experiences outside of your job? So if you're missing management, maybe you get involved with an organization where you manage a subcommittee or a committee. If you're missing the business side of things, could you be a treasurer of an organization to learn the ins and outs of a budget? Where can you garner those experiences outside of your job? And then lastly, credentials. Regardless if it's the CFRE, the ACFRE, a master's degree, how are you gaining other knowledge and experience outside of the workplace? Because remember, when you look at the stats that we saw before, a lot of the millennials within the industry are looking only 5 years out. So if you want to start thinking about how you can grow your career and look beyond those 5 years, you're going to need all these tactics to move that along. Now, I told Brian that I was going to do this because when I've done these presentations in the past, I always talk about asking matters. I had a good conversation with him at one point and said, I think I found this information 5 or 6 years ago for the first time randomly, searching through the internet. But I think that, as many of you probably already know, the importance of knowing your style is also important. So if you have an idea of where you are now, where you want to go, what's missing, how you can garner over skill sets, and then begin to see what type of fundraiser you are through Brian's company and say, are you a rainmaker, a go-getter, mission controller, kindred spirit? How can you also tap into your strengths, but also understand those weaknesses at a higher level than just what you anecdotally know as being a professional day in and day out? Another important perspective is finding strategic mentors. They help you learn the business, and a mentor has generally been there before you were there. So they can give you advice, great career advice, and help you along the process of how do I deal with a career decision? How do I deal with major gifts? How do I deal with a mail solicitation? Mentors can be extremely helpful. And it helps to build your network, which in the long run, when you're looking to grow your career, your network is an extremely valuable asset that you need to have. So one of the things that I've done is create a mentoring action plan. I think this is important because many times when I've had these conversations, people have asked me, well, Nick, I think it's great. I want a mentor, but I don't know how to find one. So this is going to be a step-by-step process to hopefully help you out. Is at first evaluate your career goals. So we talked about that. Find an aspirational mentor. I think this is really important because you really want to have someone that's in the position that where you want to go. So if you want to be an associate vice president at a university, if you want to be a director of development at a nonprofit, if you want to be an executive director, find that person and start talking to them about what it took for them to be there. Ask for a meeting. We ask all the time as fundraisers, so I think this is really important. So go ahead and ask for the meeting. And then prepare for the meeting. You're treating this just like a donor. How do you prepare so that you know that you get ROI out of the conversation with your potential mentor and they get ROI out of your meeting? And then lastly, just meet your potential mentor. Take the time to go have coffee and learn more about what they do. So making the most out of your meeting, you want to come with an agenda in mind. Now, I'm not telling you to take a piece of paper and write down everything of what you want to accomplish, but thoughtfully come in with what you want to talk with your potential mentor about. What do you want to get out of this conversation? What should your potential mentor get out of this conversation? And I think if it feels right, you need to ask for another meeting, because if you really feel like you have a connection with an individual, you want to make sure that you can continue that connection moving forward. So I think that's a great idea to feel it out. Now, the other side of the coin is, if it doesn't feel right, don't ask for another meeting. It's okay. You know, sometimes just a one-time conversation to learn more about what someone does could be enough of a relationship of what do you want to get out of it. And lastly, this is one of the things I always joke around about, is that pay the bill. So I'm a big believer of you got to have skin in the game. And so I always invite potential mentors to have coffee. And the reason I invite them to have coffee is because coffee's cheap. If I invited them to lunch and then offered to pay for lunch, it's going to cost a lot more out of my pocket. So I think it's really an important thing to show, hey, I am really here because I want to be within the industry and I want to learn from you. Now, many times I'll tell you the other person said, no, don't worry about it. I'll get coffee, da, da, da. But just the offer of doing it shows that you have a little bit of skin in the game. And I think what's really important as you get into a mentoring relationship, this is really a two-way street. So both of you need to see value in a mentee-mentor relationship. And you need to learn from your mentor and ask about other professionals you may need to know. Your mentor is someone who's been in the career field for a while. And so what do you want to get out of this? Not just from the perspective of, hey, you know, I really want to get to know this person and learn what it's like to grow my career, but also who else do you know within the industry that I should talk to? I will tell you, I have a network of four or five mentors that I talk to on a semi-regular basis for different reasons. And they've led me to individuals that I've learned a lot from when I needed more expertise in my career. So I think that's extremely valuable. And it's very similar to what we do on a day-to-day basis. I mean, many times you talk to donors and you say, well, who else do you think would be interested in our organization or interested in participating in a project? So here's an example of how you can use that in a different aspect of your professional life. Now, going into how to maximize your network, this is where you really are right now. And then your next level of influencers are your mentors. So these are your close professional relationships that provide you advice. But there's another group that I think is just as important, which are your advocates. So your advocates is that next level of professionals, contacts, that help you make career moves, help you with other advice that are important. So it's not just the fact that you're managing the mentors, but you're managing those advocates outside of you. And that's how you really utilize something I call networking plus. So it's not about the number of people you have in your network. It's how you use it. And you want to maximize those mentors as much as possible and also develop your advocates to become advocates for you. But also, I think it's important, is that favors go both ways. So there have been times where I've talked to advocates about specific items. Hey, you know, could you help me out with this career decision? Could you help me with the idea of interviewing for a potential position? And then there's been other times where my advocates have contacted me and said, hey, Nick, we're looking for someone that would be really a good fit for our organization. Do you know anyone out there that can help us? So really, favors go both ways, and that brings value for both parties within the relationship. So going from there, really developing your career plan is also important. So taking it back of thinking of, what do I want to be when I grow up? And I say this in kind of a funny way, because I mean, we're all adults, and it's not that we're, you know, looking at it from an adolescence perspective, but truly, if you're 22 to 37, you're starting to develop what it is that you want to get out of this industry and what it is that you want to accomplish. So what do you want to be? And how can you work with your mentors to create a career strategy that works for you? And that's really important, because you want to have a strategy to move it forward. How do you inform your advocates? Again, that group that can help you with your career goals. And then most importantly, work and trust your career strategy plan. One of the advocates that I have is a great individual. I've worked with her a lot on a variety of things. And she always tells me, Nick, work and trust the plan. And so I've taken that not only with my own career as a fundraiser, but my career in general, where I want to go, is working and trusting that plan. So one of the final thoughts I just want to give you, because I want to leave a little bit of time here for questions, comments, is that this is a quote that I found, and there's a consulting group called GG&A that does some work for us and other organizations. But this was in a report, and I found it really impactful. So think about this. The question was, what advice might you give a young person entering the profession? And this individual replied back with, I would say be grateful. You have chosen to serve. Embrace that. Be grateful for our amazing institutions and our American culture that celebrates philanthropy. Feel honored every day to work with these incredibly generous families who are all around us. Be generous yourself to your colleagues as well as donors. Embody the generosity you are trying to inspire in others. And so just as a final thought for all the young professionals out there, millennials we have on the phone, you know, really take this with you as you begin to use some of this information to build on your own career and your own success. So with that, I think we have some time here, Brian, to take a few questions. But thanks, everyone, for taking the time to listen to this. And I'd love to hear your comments and feedback or questions that you may have.
Nick, this is great. There were so many questions and a lot of feedback. We'll get to some of those questions. But it's such a rich topic, and it's wonderful that you're here. Very quickly, before we take those questions, we have two more great sessions coming up this summer. Carrie Rice and Adam London are going to be here on July 17th to talk about your donor page on your website and the importance vis-a-vis your major donors, right? Asking Matters, we're mostly focused on who you meet in person and cultivate over time. And a lot of those people then make their gifts on your website and what's happening for them. On August 14th, Beth Cantor, who's a big voice in our field, will be here to talk as well. So look out for information on those. And I do want to say that I've written a book on the Asking Styles, as some of you know. It is available for pre-sale, and it will launch a week from Monday. I'm very excited. Those will be in the mail a week from Monday, and I think this book is going to be a really great tool. So you might go to our website and look it up. So a couple of questions, Nick. First, and we have some questions that Asking Matters members had sent in. So we talked about the challenges of being young, and people see you as young, and so forth and so forth. But what are the advantages of being a millennial fundraiser vis-a-vis millennial donors? Now, obviously, they're the younger donors. They're going to be coming into wealth, and they may have come into wealth if they inherited it. They're building their careers and will be wealthy. So where do you see millennial fundraisers and millennial donors in terms of understanding them, and where's that benefit?
Sure. So I think the most important part of that is that, you know, millennial donors and millennial fundraisers are meeting each other on a variety of different platforms. So what is really successful for other generations of getting on the phone, getting the meeting, having a more formalized communication is not necessarily the case when it comes to millennial fundraisers and millennial donors. You know, they're meeting each other at crowdfunding sources. They're meeting each other at events. You know, the feeling, you know, for some people, there's this peer-to-peer ask within other generations where you try to get, you know, two individuals in the field, very similar, where they feel that, you know, if this individual asked me, then I'll make the gift. And in the millennial to millennial asks, some of it has just been a group of my friends are coming out and fundraising for specific issues that I also find important. And if these individuals find it important, I want to be part of that community and participate. And they find that community through social media, through other areas that are not your traditional mailer, one-on-one visit, phone call. And I think that's something that's a real advantage for millennials in our field right now, that they understand that if you want to go out and solicit the next big group of donors, especially with this giant wealth transfer that we're going to have in the near future. You know, you have to meet them where they are, and where they are is not where donors have been in the past.
Great. So here's a question from Megan, and it gets back to your point about asking your bosses for the resources you need, whether it's training, subscriptions, whatever that is. And she's asking, how do you do that without looking either inexperienced or demanding, oh, well, I want this. So how do you, and is that a different issue for millennials than it might be for others in the field?
Yeah, so I think what you really need to do is make the case. So why is it that you need this training? How is it going to help you in your career? You know, one of the things that I've done, I've talked to some small nonprofits, even in my region in Northwest Ohio, that, you know, from the manager perspective, they say, well, we want to grow our young professionals. And the young professionals are saying, well, we want to grow our talents and skills. But neither side has a plan on how they're going to do it. So what I would do if I were a young professional and I was trying to make the case for more professional development, I wouldn't just go and say, hey, I want to go to this conference so I can learn more about fundraising. I may say, you know, here's an idea. There's some things within the industry, and I'm going to use the CFRE just as an example, is that I've learned that in my career, if I get involved with my community, if I raise money, if I go to workshops, if I read, you know, all these things could make me a better fundraiser. So how can I take a built-in system like a CFRE process and utilize that with my manager to create a plan that's holistic? So then conferences and workshops are a part of that, but now you're showing your manager, your VP, whatever it may be, that I'm strategically thinking this out. I'm not just saying I want to go to a conference. I want to do these things over the course of 3 years to become a better professional. And I think making that case kind of goes back to setting the tone in the office and shows that you do have credibility and you do understand what it takes to be a better fundraiser. So create the plan to make that case to your manager.
Great. And I'd add to that, Nick, that you know, some managers are smart and understand that everyone needs ongoing training and others aren't. And they don't put it in the budget. They don't fight for it in their budgets. And I've heard this one. Some people say, well, why train if fundraisers are going to leave? And it's like, well, if you don't train them, they're certainly going to leave because you're not going to help them be successful here in their current job. So of course, they're going to go get another one. So I think some of this is actually across our industry, where some managers value it and the organizations understand the need to have a budget for that if they're going to have the best employees they can have across the board, and some don't. This is an interesting question going back to the mentoring. Kenzie asked, what kind of value can I offer a mentor? Right? You talked about how it's a two-way street and you talked about buying a cup of coffee and such, but how can a millennial more clearly articulate their value to a mentor? And what about older millennials versus younger millennials as mentors and mentees?
Sure. So I would say that the value that you can give to a mentor, the one that I've seen the most, and we've been talking to other young professionals in the field, is that many of the mentors in the industry are looking for ways to give back. They're looking for ways to be involved with the next generation to help build them up. So simply just by having the conversation, many mentors are getting that experience and value out of giving, you know, instilling their knowledge onto the next group of individuals who will lead our industry. Some of the other ways that I've also seen value is that, you know, many people, as you've seen in the theme of this presentation, see millennials as a quagmire. They don't know how to deal with them. They're trying to figure it out. So I've been in meetings with mentors talking about, well, Nick, I'm having a problem, you know, just trying to connect with, you know, my staff member who's a millennial, what can I do to do a better job of that? Or how do I connect with millennial donors? Or can I get your advice on this about your generation? And I think that's the value that you can add. Obviously, there's also the value of the recruitment aspect. So, I mean, I've worked with mentors and other people about, hey, I'm trying to beef up my staff for a campaign or do this. anyone in the industry you know. So there's a variety of ways you can build it. And I think just like donors, each mentor and mentee has their own experiences that they want to get out of this relationship. So how do you understand those and build on those? Now, from the perspective of older millennials and younger millennials and the mentor-mentoree relationship, you know, I was just in Seattle and I was giving a presentation very similar to this and had a conversation with an individual that, you know, the older half of the millennials really can play a vital role in developing the younger millennials because they've been in your shoes. I mean, generationally, there's a lot of things that are similar. They were the ones who are just a young professional in their offices. They're now mid-career people. You know, they've seen what works and what doesn't work. So they also can be a great resource. You know, you don't have to find, you know, someone who's very much older than you to be a mentor. Maybe you need that person to help guide you through the beginning of your career and what are the right and wrong moves that they learned along the way. So I think it is important to also look at mentor and mentee relationships where you may have millennial to millennial because there's a lot of value in the shared and recent experiences that they could have.
That's great, Nick. And you know, I'm reminded because people are saying, you know, how do I reach out, get a mentor, and so forth. And I think back, I didn't have a mentor when I was young. I was in a big position when I was 26. And I remember, you know, going out to see these big philanthropists and whatever. And I was very young. But the older fundraisers, such as I am today, we were young. Right. And we actually experienced very similar things in our 20s and early 30s as you all, you millennials on today are experiencing. So I think there's actually a little bit more empathy there than you might think. And we also realized that we got very little training, probably a lot less than you got because there was less training around. And we were winging it. And lots of us in fundraising are winging it, if we're really honest, because many of us get a lot less training than we need and a lot of less training than is offered in a lot of the for-profit field. So, and as someone said, you can check with your AFP chapters also. Many of them have mentoring. So I think there are a lot of opportunities and many of us are delighted to do it because we realize from whence we came. So I would encourage you all to do that because we need you in the field. With this great change in demographics and with the continued growth of nonprofits, we need people to be excited about fundraising and want to be in the profession for a long time. So, Nick, we are past 2 o'clock. I want to be respectful of everyone's time. We got some other questions we might be able to answer by email. Nick, I want to thank you for this really enlightening discussion. A lot of people have typed in how helpful this has been. And I appreciate all the work that you're doing in the community to make us a stronger community and help us raise more money for our great nonprofit. So thank you for being with us today.
Thanks, Brian. I really appreciate it.
Take care, everyone. Have a great afternoon and best of luck with your fundraising.